invite them to the conversation. For those who are newly joining us, my name is Jim Bolter. I go by he, him pronouns. Thrilled to be here talking with you all again about sustainability from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Not sustainability, I misplaced my participles. I'm from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Sustainability is not from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, although occasionally we do a little bit of it, so when we can get away with it. Okay. Let's take a moment as we come to the final session of this and just contextualize a little bit. This is one of the things that inspired me, frankly, to seek the opportunity to be with you here this summer was this theme, right? We rest alongside the land. We share the abundance of our landscapes as equals with one another and with the wild creatures. Money is de-emphasized, but we're talking about economic sustainability today. Slaves are set free, debts are released. This is the Shimta practice. I don't know if I've spelled or pronounced that correctly. Shimta?
Shmita.
Shmita. Wow, not even close. Oh, I see. Shmita. Sorry. Shmita and Jubilee challenge existing relationships to work, consumption, ownership, and control. They remind us that the land has its own relationship with God and rest is required. Remember, if you will, back, those of you who were with us before, when Michael Green talked, we said the extraordinary statement that, yes, we could achieve our sustainability goals by 2030, but not if it was business as usual. It seems to me that Shmita is all about business not being usual. Any thoughts? I just want to know how, especially those of you who've been with us or those who are new to us in terms of thinking about sustainability, in what way do you hear echoes of what we've been talking about in this? Does this fit together for you? Thoughts?
This Jubilee has always been important to me because a central part of it was redistribution of property and reflects the fact that, as I understand it, that every people that survives has some way of redistribution during their history. In the Northwest, it was the potlatch that the native people had.
Right.
But if you don't redistribute property, inevitably one group dominates the other so much that the society begins to dysfunction, like ours is beginning to dysfunction.
Right, yeah, I love that, especially the drawing to the potlatch of the Pacific Northwest peoples. I mean, we're going to be talking about patterns of consumption and the inevitable patterns of pollution that follow patterns of consumption. But this idea of more equitable distribution of resources is obviously an important one.
I also love it because I encounter a lot of Christians who say Jesus had nothing to do with economics, but he called for Jubilee.
Yes, right. And we'll actually look at some, hopefully we'll get to some ELCA, an ECLCA social statement on economics here before the end of this. And why is my pointer not working? Okay, let's just do this. Okay. And we're going to skip past that. So as I did last time, I want to just refresh our memories of the SDGs here. This is another video from the United Nations related to the sustainability the Sustainability Development Goals. I'm just going to play it without any further comment.
Refugee in Pakistan, I was refugee in Iran, I was refugee in Dubai, and now I'm a refugee in France.
Les gens, quand tu es handicapé, ils n'essaient même pas de voir ce que tu es capable de faire, mais ils touchent juste à travers ton handicap.
Haberme venido no fue una buena idea.
Fue un นี้พวกขยมคือจีสัตว์หรือก็จีมนุษย
์ยังคือลูกเขาไม่สามารถทำอะไรได้
लाइट रहे तने उजिया रहे हमरो बाल बचा उठिया रहे
आगा मम्मी फुमीदम भी नहीं सब ने में बे मुश्किल ने में खर्द
porque se todo mundo tivesse alimento em casa ela podia raciocinar então poderia ser pobre mas teria a inteligência na cabeça para poder sair dali
Parce que nous avons dit que nous avons une mission qui est en train de se faire. Nous avons dit que nous avons une mission qui est en train de
I've left my husband to be with a woman. And for me, that's a huge step in my country as an African woman to do that. I do have a strong voice and I'm strong as a woman speaking for myself.
Nous devons dire au monde que nous existons, que vous êtes là. Et je suis sûr qu'aucune misère, aucune pauvreté extrême n'est pas une fatalité. On peut la combattre.
Obviously, there has been an enormous effort at the United Nations and by a great number of nonprofits and governments, non-governmental organizations and governments, to push forward the Sustainable Development Goals in a way that we didn't see for the Millennium Development Goals, and maybe we haven't seen for any other sort of United Nations initiative. So I want to ask you all, before we get back into this, I want to ask you, first of all, to maybe choose one of these questions and find someone nearby you to discuss it with, and then we'll widen the discussion a bit. Is it important, or why is it important that the United Nations develop these 17 Sustainable Development Goals? I mean, they seem utopian: to end hunger, to end poverty, to make education available for all, to end gender discrimination, to end climate change, to protect life on water and on land, and all of the economic goals that we'll discuss today. Why is it important, or is it important, that the United Nations has articulated these in the way they have? Does it matter that these 993 nation signatories, even if these are non-binding, these are not laws, there is no enforcement mechanism? Why does it matter? Are there other stakeholders that matter in this besides nation states? By what means are they intended to have an effect, even without an enforcement mechanism? So can you imagine what elements of the Sustainable Development Goals, those of you learned about, that might actually help move us closer to the desired place, even in the absence of an enforcement mechanism? What are things that could change for them to be even more, or maybe not even, to be more effective than they are right now? And what are things that can be done in our own communities to increase their effectiveness? So let's take just 3 or 4 minutes, find one or two people nearby you. If you haven't introduced yourselves already, some of you know each other already from sitting in proximity to each other, but if you haven't, do so, please introduce yourselves and choose one or two of these questions. And we're just gonna take 3 or 4 minutes, okay? And then we'll have a brief time to report out because we still have a lot of material to get through today. So do this.
Beverly.
What could we be doing to like make our own? So I, oh, sorry. So I know I gave you about an hour's worth of discussion in 5 minutes. So take one other minute or two to finish up and then think about maybe one thing you would like to bring back to the full group from your own discussions, okay? One or two more minutes, one thing that you'd maybe like to bring to the full group. Thank you. Okay. This is always the hard part for me because I can hear the rich conversations going on around me. And on one hand, I hate to interrupt them, but on the other hand, I really want to hear what you all are talking about. So I'm going to come to this group over here first and ask if there's someone who could maybe just say maybe which question you addressed, or maybe it was something that came out of the questions instead of a specific question. What? Who could report out from this group over here? Yeah. I especially like your idea about the importance of tracking them, and that brings to mind, right, the 169 targets and all of the hundreds or even maybe thousands of indicators now. Another class I teach, there's a popular saying in business, you say you can't manage what you don't measure, right? So in a sense, this is trying to take all of these sort of intangibles about peace and about poverty and justice and say, let's find a way to measure them, right? Let's hear from this group over here next. Whoever would like to grab that?
No, I do not want to do that.
I think you had some great points. I think two things that we talked about. One was, and Bev mentioned the group would say she has great points, was what we've learned unintentionally. So, for example, she says for most of her life, Planned Parenthood has been trying to work throughout the world. It didn't achieve the population growth goals that started it, but we learned about the importance of education of women through that, you know. So that learning curve of things we didn't know. So that was one thing we talked about. Something that I had noticed and thought was helpful here is I could begin to see the commonality between similar lists. So for example, Drawdown, which is a book about 100 most impactful things we can do for climate change. Well, in the top couple of those is education of women as well. Right. So we have that perspective about education of women, we have this perspective about education of women, and whatever else might be there, and then you start to have these aha moments, right? So,
One thing I love about the goals is that no point does it say control the global population. It says education for all, seek gender equity. And then the population solves itself, right? As Planned Parenthood and so many other organizations have shown us so well. Who from this group here would like to just briefly summarize what your conversations? You've been nominated.
I don't know that we came to a conclusion about
No, anything, probably not. That's fine.
Except we're all agreed that this is tough.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Profound. I'll take it at that. Definitely. And then finally, from this group over here, anyone? Yes. Let me come back. I feel like Donahue here. Oh, okay.
So we talked about all the other comments about how difficult this is, but that it really does matter that there are 193 nations, because you're not then dependent on one nation, and so you're maybe somewhat less impacted by individual political will because you have multiple stakeholders and not one particular nation in charge of this. And then my comment to the group was, I find it fascinating that the United States has signed on to this, and supportive obviously, but has yet to sign on to the Declaration of the Rights of the Child. And so I think it's really interesting that our country, you know, has these different investment.
Thanks for that comment. Let's go ahead and bring it over to this group, yeah.
We're giving him the mic because he's at the most disturbing state.
Well, you know, in personal life, what really transforms people, usually two conditions, either great catastrophe or great love. And in these 17 Sustainable Development Goals, I'm not really familiar with them, but they almost sound like virtues of God, you know, our God-like nature or coming manifesting itself. So, cynically, I think we need a huge catastrophe, something to really reprioritize how we. This probably is really stupid solution to it, but this is the right way to go about it. I obviously identifying 17 sustainable goals and measuring them and creating strategies, but right now I'm sort of very cynical. We are collectively cynical.
And we also thought, I said there is a lot going on here that's been going on at Holden, our conversations with Holden since 1982, right? So what's different now? It seems to be, I think, the measurement of it, and then we can take it forward. But, you know, my colleague here is waiting for a disaster so that we can move. No, no, just understanding that we don't get moved. Well,
climate might be. Well. But I would say we've had all these disasters of oil spills, of giant buildings collapsing and a gajillion people die. I mean, we see on the news all these crazy, horrible disasters that aren't moving political will.
Yeah.
Wildfires. Enough. Aren't moving it enough.
Yeah. COVID.
Wildfires.
Yeah. Climate change is global, though. That could be...
Climate change.
So the consensus I'm hearing is A, these are hard. B, it would be really great if we could do these somehow without reverting to the death of millions. That would be nice, right? So what could change them to have a greater effect? What are things that could be done in our own communities to increase their effectiveness? Jordan?
One of the things that my community has been doing, different groups in my community, is showing up when a representative or a senator has an open house, showing up and raising issues, and then also writing letters, and then asking other people to do the same, that agree with us, to do the same thing. If you get it, you don't need a majority of people to make a politician pay attention.
Yeah. Right, so there's that political will piece there, but by direct action. I would even say building relationships with your member of Congress, so it's not just strangers coming to the office, but they know who you are, they know that you're coming, and they know that you're coming back if they don't do it. And you don't have to be a jerk about it. You just have to say, look, I'm going to come back every year, every month, and we're going to have a respectful conversation until this changes,
and
right?
Next time we come, there's going to be more of us.
And there's going to be more of us, exactly. Yeah. So there's that part about building political will. Any other thoughts before we move on? Yes.
I was going to say, this is harder with these goals because it's nations involved. But putting your money where your mouth is and supporting companies that you know are, I guess they're not actively a part of these goals, but are doing something that can help these goals and are making changes to the way that they're doing things that is going to make a difference.
Thank you for such an excellent transition. Let's put our money where our mouth is, and we're going to transition to economics. But I do want to highlight that increasingly, as more and more companies are responding to the public's desire for more to act more sustainably and to expect more of the companies that they give money to be sustainable. We see, I mentioned in the first session about ESG, environment, society, and governance reports that are created by a lot of companies for shareholders, not just for consumers. Sorry, I hate that word, for customers, not much better. For the public that they create things for. But also, if you look at companies' web pages, you're going to see more and more, or I have been seeing over the last few years even, companies that are specifically calling out, we're addressing this particular sustainable development goal. So these are even percolating into the corporate world, which I think is maybe an encouraging sign. Again, it's always tricky with greenwashing, but I think it's an encouraging sign. Okay, so here are the last four of the sustainable development goals we're going to look at today. These are related to economy, and as we kind of talked about, the importance of this is not just because economy is is a means by which we can hopefully accomplish some of the social and environmental goals. But as my economist friend always said, economics really is a science of how we express our values in our exchanges, our values when we exchange things of value. Does that make sense? And so to the degree that we want our personal intrinsic values to be manifested in the world, we spend our dollars appropriately. And whether that's my own personal bank account dollars, or it's, right, where my tax dollars go to at my community level, at my congregational level, the giving in our congregational level, and any level of taxation, all those are really important because they will drive in many ways those other 8 or 9 goals. I'm just gonna break into 4 groups because you kind of did that nicely for me just a moment ago. And so this group over here is gonna look at promote sustained, inclusive, and sustainable economic growth, full and productive employment, and decent work for all. That's all. This group over here is going to looking at building resilient infrastructure, promote inclusive, sustainable industrialization, and foster innovation. This group that's sort of nucleated over here, reduce inequality within and among countries. And I know this group here is split down the middle, but I'm going to ask you to get the band back together. To ensure sustainable consumption and production patterns. Now, I want to do something slightly different this time around. As before, you have the front page and the back page. The front page looks at some statistics about the current status of the SDG. The back page, as before, of this page here, the back page lists each of the targets for that SDG. And then the second page, which is on thicker paper, purely by accident, is some excerpts from Pope Francis's Laudato Si. I actually want you to focus primarily on the second page, the thicker page here, the Laudato Si excerpt. You need a little bit of the targets here to contextualize these. Because Laudato Si, both it and the SDGs were published in 2015. And I'm absolutely convinced, I have no reason to think otherwise, that Pope Francis had people working on Laudato Si that were also working on the SDGs simultaneously. And there are echoes of the SDGs throughout this extraordinary document. So while the subject headings don't necessarily always match one-to-one, you see the same themes prop over and over and over again. So think of the targets, right, as sort of a guide to the Pope's writings here. And I want you to think about the questions we talked about last time. Here, focusing on the second two questions this time. Again, take maybe 6 or 7 minutes, and then we're going to come back together, okay? So, let me know if you have any questions. Take another 1 or 2 minutes, please. I know I'm not giving you much time, but we're limited to an hour here. So 1 or 2 more minutes.
I mean, a lot of these combined sort of like get everyone involved in work with also
small scale entrepreneurs.
Doing this stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, it is.
Okay, so I've got to say, I've only heard snippets, but I'm really excited about what I'm hearing. So, selfishly, I'm going to draw you back into the big group here, and I'm going to start with this group over here too, because I was kind of excited about what they were saying. So, do you want to surf again? Thank you.
I think from the Laudato Si, one of the lines that really stood out to us.
Actually, real quickly, can you just make sure you refresh our memory of which of the SDGs you're looking at?
Yeah. So we had goal 8, which was promote inclusive and sustainable economic growth, employment, and decent work for all. And can I move straight on to Laudato
Si?
Okay.
Sure.
One of the lines in Laudato Si that I think really stood out was to ensure economic freedom from which all can effectively benefit, restraints occasionally have to be imposed on those possessing greater resources and financial power. So that it kind of implies that large companies and all these like super giants that are hoarding all of the economic growth need to be held back a little bit, and we need to be like instead of like investing in small businesses as kind of like a charity, we need to have serious investments and loans given to smaller businesses so that we can be building from the ground up.
Great. Do you think that would apply even, I'll ask you all five of you, does that apply even to the disparity in wealth between individuals, not just between corporations and large corporations and small corporations, or even large corporations and the poor? Do you think that same idea is Pope Francis calling for that, do you think?
It doesn't really specify that it's individuals and corporations in the document. It just says
It just says those possessing greater resources and financial power. So I think it applies to everyone.
Anybody.
Yeah,
anybody
so broadly. Yeah. Hard sell, right? Maybe a hard sell. Thank you. Thank you for that. Steve, can I prevail upon? Okay. Would you please? All right. So please tell us which SDG you're looking at first.
Which one were we looking at? We were speaking probably more broadly than you were hoping. I never saw this page before.
Okay.
I'll tell you what we did do. How's that?
Okay.
Or did talk about. I think it might be fair to say the last thing we talked about was fair housing and the need for housing. And if we're going to make something happen, we think voting matters. And when somebody comes and wants to build a new high-rise, in my city, the city council has to approve, and I'm proud to say that our city has been insisting on a certain number of low-cost dwelling places there. And a good reason for that is that people who are homeless, they don't have a lot of the necessary connections. They don't have a permanent address. So how do you apply for certain kinds of help or for jobs or something like that? So I'm going to say it. We think it all came back to voting, and that groups like organized groups like churches, standing up and getting at our elected officials, is what can move those things. And something that struck me is, I think it came from Joshua, but let's not be discouraged at one failure. Keep at it.
Excellent. And what I love about that is not just about voting, it's about voting all the way down the ballot. Right, these local races that determine fair housing. And fair housing fits very beautifully into SDG 9 about resilient infrastructure, right? That can be accomplished at the local level.
So one of the things that the Laudato Si mentions is, on the one hand, advances in technology of all sorts is good and has reduced human suffering and has great potential for improving the lot of human beings. But it has also high potential for inequity when it concentrates the power in the hands of a few.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. And a good example that's related to housing, right, is in affordable housing projects, actually having solar energy on the rooftops is really valuable because it means that people who maybe can't afford to pay their monthly energy bills have substantially reduced energy bills, right? So those get married together really nicely. So over here, you're on SDG 10, I think, right?
Yeah, this was tough. We danced around it. We ended with saying that we do feel it's important for faith leaders to speak to these issues.
Mm-hmm.
I should tell you what SDG 10 is.
Yes, thanks.
Reduce inequality within and among countries. And because the economy can't be separated from our faith. It's not that money is separate from who we are and what we value. We spend it on what we value. A couple sentences that struck me in this. We did read through the whole page you gave us from Laudato Si. And it's talking about that we can't, I'm going to start in the middle of a sentence here, we can't legitimize the present model of distribution where a minority believes that it has the right way to, that it has the right to consume in a way which can never be universalized, since the planet could not even contain the waste products of such consumption. And that is, I guess, aimed squarely at us.
Thank you. And also a perfect segue to our final SDG for today. 12, sustainable consumption and production patterns.
Yes, ensure sustainable consumption and production patterns. And the forms of pollution that the Pope was talking about is derived from people's daily living experience. And a couple of things that we talked about is, for instance, the pandemic created this supply chain problem where the things we want are sitting out in the bay in San Francisco or somewhere. And so it had to create an alternative way of providing for things or just get along without those things. And now lately with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the cost of fuel has skyrocketed. So again, other things are being developed locally just as a result of the economics. And if somehow that whole process can be encouraged locally, federally, statewide, without having to have those supply chains disrupted to change our way of doing things, or have it continue once those things are coming ashore. It shows that we can change. But again, it grew out of our earlier conversation, it grew out of necessity. That's kind of the way we function in this country. We're right on the edge of disaster, and then we can make a change.
Yeah, so this is really important, right? I love the issue, the message of hope there that we can change, although there is this issue of what prompts it. But the idea that maybe the current globalized supply chains are maybe neither environmentally viable nor economically just or socially just is a really important question. Okay.
To the point about whether our churches, Lutheran or other,
can be a place where money is talked about because awkward. Right? It turns out that the ELCA, one of their sort of more recent social statements from 1999, sufficient sustainable livelihood for all. And actually, it almost sounds a little bit like what Pope Francis told us earlier. I like the opening statement here. Many are prospering as never before. At the same time, others continue to lack what they need for basic subsistence. Out of deep concern for those affected adversely, the Evangelical Church here assesses economic life today in light of the moral imperative to seek sufficient, sustainable livelihood for all. And I'm just going to just give you a flavor of this document. It starts with a bit of a theological basis for why this is important, much as Pope Francis did. Oops, I think that went too far. And then it breaks it onto our obligation and ongoing tensions. And again, this idea of sufficient, sustainable livelihood at all. And then it breaks down the idea of what is for all mean? What is a livelihood? What is sufficiency? And what is sustainability? And it goes on to say, puts a point on this, right? For all refers to the whole household of God, all people and creation throughout the world. So not limiting all to the human species, but a more inclusive and expansive definition. We should assess economic activities in terms of how they affect all, and then it highlights especially people living in poverty. What is livelihood? And here I'm thinking of SDG 8. Is there value to work? Is there human dignity to work? And Pope Francis writes very compellingly about the importance of the opportunity to engage in dignified work from a theological basis as well. So could be jobs, self-employment, business ownership, accumulated wealth, support of family, community networks, government assistance. But look at this. Again, this is echoes of SDG 8 right here. Enough, but not too much. Wow. The ELCA was writing this in 1999. Who knew that? It's kind of a shocker, isn't it? We should have adequate access to income and other resources that enable people to meet their basic needs, including nutrition, clothing, housing, healthcare, personal development, at least 3 boats, four cars in your driveway, and, that isn't actually there, right? It's about participation in community with dignity. Fairness in how goods, services, income, and wealth are allocated among people so they can acquire what they need to live. And then we see sustainability come back in. Again, this is in 1999. So this is well in advance of, but this document, it should be noted, followed on the Care of Creation document. And so you hear echoes of Care of Creation here. And in fact, look, remember those of you who are in session one, there's our Brundtland definition highlighted again in this particular, of sustainability, highlighted in this particular social statement. The capacity of natural and social systems, both natural and social systems to survive and thrive together over the long term. That inter and intra-generational justice element. Oops, that's the wrong way. Okay. So, just some questions, no grading. I would like, we're getting very close to the end of this now, so I want you to have, again, to discuss in groups, and it doesn't have to be the same groups. Maybe you want to just turn to one person next to you, and maybe that would be the thing to do for these last questions here. Compared to what you knew or thought before this class, or these four classes, or however many you were able to attend, how do you feel about the state of the future and planet and society? Of the issues we studied in the SDGs, we've looked at 16 of them now, which is your greatest concern? And doesn't have to be one of the SDGs. Maybe it's a single issue that came out of that SDG. What do you feel is the role of the church? Maybe your church, if you have one. Your local community, or even your own personal role in meeting the goals of the SDGs, either globally or locally in your own community. For the Lutherans or the Lutheran curious in your group, what do you think about the social statements of the ELCA as they relate to sustainability? Did you know that these were the beliefs or the not doctrine, what's the word I'm looking for? These are the
policy.
Not quite policy either.
Theological perspectives.
That represent the values of the ELCA, right? Did you know this as they relate to sustainability? And finally, coming back to our Jubilee theme, what will you return with? Choose any one or two of those. Turn to one, two, or three people around you and just have a brief discussion. And I won't ask you necessarily to report out. I won't pass the mic this time. But if any of you have something you'd like to share with the broader group, that would be absolutely lovely. So do take just a few minutes to look at these. Thank you.
You had to move over here before. I don't know. I don't know.
I think the good part of it too is that it gives, there's a positive way to apply to your freshman, right? So sometimes they don't apply to other kinds of things. And when there's scores, you know, that provides that opportunity. You had the greatest concern, which is the people who will just react that it's the United Nations and they're protesting.
Respect your time as participants in this class. Sadly, I need to cut off your conversations.
I don't feel like I'm babbling.
No, I think that's a good
thing. And before,
to do.
before I take an opportunity to allow some of you to share some of your thoughts and responses, let me just say one last thing. If any of you would like to correspond with me, would like access to these materials, you know, the internet's a wonderfully open place, but if you want to interact with me directly, I have two business cards up front. One is my professional business card as a UW-Eau Claire professor. The other one is my business card as a Citizens Climate Lobby volunteer. Take either. You can contact me either way, and I would be more than happy to continue the conversation, to provide you any sort of the resources that I've worked through here. I have a fairly lengthy document related to resources for the church, particularly the Lutheran Church, but not exclusively, related to climate change. I would be happy to share that with you and so forth. So don't let the conversation end now. But before we finish, and we actually are at 4:30 here, but I would love to hear from any of those of you who'd be willing to stay for just a few minutes to say a little bit about what your thoughts were. Yeah.
Somebody yesterday was talking about Braver Angels, and I did bring the book that I was reading if anybody wants to have a look at it.
And may I just borrow it so I can show this? So that I never thought of it that way, by Monica Guzman, and it looks like this, Braver Angels. There we go. Thank you for that.
I'm about two-thirds of the way through it, and so far I recommend it highly. I'll just stick it up here if anybody wants to look at it.
And again, Braver Angels is an organization that is excellent in coaching people at how to have difficult conversations without resorting to conflict, maybe. Yeah.
Jordan. I have a concrete proposal for congregations. We should be aware that Laudato Si was not written for Roman Catholics. It was written for the human community. Mm. And I would be very interesting if we paired up with one other church that were in full communion with Presbyterian, Methodist, Episcopal, one of those churches, and then together, having read Laudato Si, we approached the local Catholic parish and said, we wanted to study Laudato Si with you and see what can come out of it. Because I'm convinced if you had a Catholic, and if you could get the Synod and the Diocese eventually doing the same thing, to have the Catholics and major Protestant groups approach any politician, they are going to listen.
Wow. Yeah. That's excellent. And I would also emphasize that there are great study guides out there, either ones that you can purchase at bookstores or something like online bookstores, but also online studies that people have just put together for Laudato Si to work through the document as a community of faith or just as a community of concern. Other thoughts? Yes.
I was going to say that the biggest SDG that I would say is like the biggest concern is climate action, because like recently, I think it was a few months ago, I read an article that basically said that even if all humans disappeared from the Earth right now, like nobody was here, there was no one to further climate change, because of the heating that's already going on, it would still continue progressing even without us here. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of this thing that we don't need to just stop climate change, we don't need it to plateau right now, we need it to like turn entirely around. Mm-hmm. And that's not something we have a lot of time to do.
Right, so earlier you mentioned, sorry, remind me of your name, but Drawdown.
Dave,
yeah. So there's an excellent resource out there if you just look out to Drawdown Project. It talks about how we can bend the curve and then actually bring the emissions curve to negative emissions over time. There are, if we ceased all fossil fuel emissions today, tomorrow, forget today, let's say tomorrow. On one hand, the ice sheets will continue to melt, sea levels will continue to rise. The good news is more recent scientific research tells us that within years to a decade after net zero emissions, the climate will stabilize, so it won't continue to warm. That probably wasn't understood, but even as recent as 15 years ago, 10 or 15 years ago. So it is encouraging to know that zeroing out our emissions actually will stay, but it won't return the climate to where it was, certainly, but it will stop it from continuing, mostly because the oceans suck up CO2 at an appreciable rate. So there is some encouraging news that getting to net zero really does help, and that's very hopeful. But you're right, we don't have much time to get there. No. Other thoughts? Yes.
Yeah, I just, connecting what we've been hearing here with the communicating science session.
Yeah.
And not to be too Pollyanna-ish about it, but today he mentioned the Stockdale paradox, which was maintaining unwavering hope and belief in the end of the story. And so I think for me that was something I was thinking about today, because it can be really easy to just say, forget it, this is too complex, we can't do it. And that's simpler and easier to hold on to, but I think trying to maintain that belief that we can do this despite its complexities is what I'm going to return with.
Thank you so much for that. And especially related to climate change, I see this from the 10:30 set, from Jess' 10:30 session. Check out Catherine Hayhoe, H-A-Y-H-O-E. She is a physicist, climate scientist, climate modeler, and a person of faith. And she speaks very compellingly about how to talk to, have difficult conversations about climate change with people who may have different ideologies than you. She comes from an evangelical, strongly evangelical background. So she has a lot of practice doing this, right? She has a brand new book out called
Saving Us.
Because we realize that in the end, the planet will be fine. It's us that we're concerned about. I mean, in geologic time, I should say. Yes, Dave.
Just a brain worm that's been going on, and I just got to get it out. The first thing you said is that Jubilee is not business as usual, or Challenge is business as usual. The brain worm for me is, I disagree. Jubilee is part of a system, the Sabbath system. Now, in that system, it is part of business as usual. And it seems to me that another way to say this, I totally get what you're saying, but another way to say this is, we people of faith have a system where this is business as usual, and it's a sacred system, and we need to re-engage that. And so my take home will be, can I exercise my faith in such a way that Jubilee, Sabbath, at all levels, are seen as business as usual, something I can commit to?
That's very profound. I really appreciate that. So you're saying it's sort of like 11:58, the night before the Sabbath, right now.
Well, we're on a cycle, obviously.
Yeah.
But we got to get on the merry-go-round somewhere.
Yeah. Right.
My goal is just to get back on the merry-go-round, to be on the right. So not the capitalist system, which has no cyclical rest. It's
but on purposes. Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you. Other thoughts? Yes.
This is my first session, so I'm seeing the SDGs for the first time. And what stood out to me is that they are general, and they don't define how to get to the goals, but just define the objective. And so they can seem a little pointless for that. But I think that it makes me think about political polarization here, which is like one of the reasons why we can't get there, you know? And how important it is to state like what you're for, affirmatively, you know, and find common ground in that rather than like getting so entrenched in the how to get there, you know, like making room for diversity of economic systems on different scales and diversity of, just like ways of going about it. So I see this as like part of it. This approach is like really valuable despite, all of the.
Thank you for that. I love that you sort of articulated the 17 SDGs as things that we are for. And so much right now, our political system is things that I'm against, or worse yet, the thing that's out there that could get you, right? So much of our politics is dominated by language of fear, right? Instead, this idea of language of hope and language of values, because at the end of the day, I don't care where on the political spectrum you lie, there aren't many people who are like, yes, I'm going to vote for poverty. Yes, I'm going to vote for hunger. Yes, I'm going to vote, right? By and large, this comes from a shared value system. And coming back to the communicating science and the words of Dr. Catherine Hayhoe as well, that idea of reaching across whatever divide, maybe the divide is the Thanksgiving dinner table, right, with shared values, or maybe the divide is the political divide within our congregations that we tend not to ever talk about because it's too uncomfortable, but guess what? We do come together with shared values and shared faith. Yeah.
I want to quote one of my favorite theologians, my college football coach, who said, just because we're losing the game, boys, doesn't mean we have to quit playing.
And in this case, We don't have an option to quit playing. We're in the game for good until we leave the game permanently. But right, so we do have to keep with it. Other thoughts?
I wonder, I loved what you said about those, and I wonder, I'm just looking through the list, most of them, when you look at them, the things that were for, I suspect there would be people who might not say they're for reduced inequalities. Do you think?
Maybe not, they might think it, but they're probably not out loud, they'd probably be too ashamed to admit to it.
The conservatives I talk to say they're not against inequality, but it's the church, it's the religious community should do it, not the